Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org. This program is recorded from an earlier live broadcast.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the second half hour, we will be joined by Bexar County Judge Peter Sakai to take your calls and questions. But first, let's talk about sheriffs. They are part of the American myth, from Andy Taylor in Mayberry to Pat Garrett, the sheriff who shot and killed the famous outlaw Billy the Kid. But then there's also Arizona's former sheriff, Joe Arpaio, the self-styled America's toughest sheriff. Arpaio is known for what a federal investigation called the worst racial profiling in U.S. history, and also investigating former U.S. President Barack Obama's birth certificate, and he continues to claim without evidence that it was forged. Arpaio is the template for the Constitutional Sheriff, a movement that claims they are unbound by the federal government. It's a movement that is increasing the risk of a conflict between local law enforcement and federal authorities over things like gun rights and election denial. Journalist Jessica Fisco has written a new book about this called The Highest Law in the Land: How the Unchecked Power of Sheriffs Threaten Democracy. And Jessica Fisco, welcome to The Source.
Good to be here.
So, what is a constitutional sheriff? Where is it in the Constitution that the sheriffs have so much authority?
So to be clear, the term constitutional sheriff is the word that these sheriffs have made up for themselves. Sheriffs are not in the U.S. Constitution. And while they are in some state constitutions, they're set up alongside all sorts of other local officials. But the word constitutional sheriff comes from this idea that these sheriffs, who are all currently serving elected sheriffs, are the only people who can properly interpret the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments. In other words, the sheriff is the highest law in the land. So the sheriff decides which laws are constitutional and can be enforced, a bit like a king. Some of the sheriffs say that they are above the president, the Supreme Court, governors, the FBI, the ATF. So in other words, it's the sheriff who decides how the law gets enforced.
I want to play a clip from someone you profile in the book, Richard Mack, former sheriff, and he kind of talks about his grievances and what's that all about. Let's listen to that clip.
I set the example when I was sheriff in standing for freedom, standing for the Constitution, keeping my oath of office, making sure that the God-given rights of my citizens and my county were being protected. And that's all we need to do nationwide. And it's the doctrine of interposition. You interpose. You don't commit acts of violence, but you let the federal government know. You let any bureaucrat know from the state or federal government, you are not going to come into my county and abuse the rights of the citizens, commit acts of oppression against law-abiding citizens, and no matter what. Do they have jurisdiction, and do we trust these people from the bureaucracies of Washington, D.C.? Do we trust, and is the federal government trustworthy? Do we trust the FBI? Do we trust the FDA? Do we trust the EPA? Do we trust the Secret Service? Do we trust the BATF? Do we trust the DEA? These agencies, especially the IRS, have routinely committed crimes against the American people.
So, Jessica, tell me more about this guy, Richard Mack, and what is he talking about, this doctrine?
So Richard Mack is a two-term sheriff from Arizona. He was a sheriff, in the late 80s, early 90s, so he hasn't been a sheriff for quite some time. During the second term that he served as sheriff, he was recruited by the National Rifle Association to join a lawsuit against the federal government that related to the Brady Handgun Bill. So the Brady Handgun Bill, to take people back, was one of the first firearm regulations done by the federal government, and it instituted background checks. And so part of the Brady Bill, before they had the what we now have, which is a sort of computerized background check system, the local law enforcement, local sheriffs were supposed to conduct background checks. And so the National Rifle Association recruited these sheriffs to sue, and they won. The case is called Prince v. United States, named after a Montana sheriff. Richard Mack has his own printout of the Supreme Court case that he calls Mack v. United States, which is not the case name. But in any event, he used this case basically to prove his like far right street cred. So, you know, one of his main arguments has been to support unlimited access to firearms, including machine guns and, you know, no red flag laws, anything like that. But as you heard him speak in this clip, he's talking about this doctrine called interposition, which is a doctrine that that has been periodically brought up by states' rights advocates. So the, you know, last time it was used was during the civil rights era when schools did not want to desegregate. And states argued that they could interpose and not enforce the Supreme Court ruling in Brown v. Board. So the word interposition really comes from this, you know, deeply rooted racist background that was usually used to ignore federal civil rights law.
But now, we know that, you know, but we know that when things get hot enough, they call out the National Guard, they enforce integration.
That's exactly right. Eventually, they had to call out the National Guard to enforce integration. And, you know, I think that that's something that, look, the federal government wants to avoid that. But, you know, when push came to shove, that's what happened. So, you know, there Richard Mack is talking about, and what's interesting about him is he frames it as a nonviolent solution, right? He takes the idea that people should oppose the government and government agencies, right? Everything from the FDA to the environmental law to FBI, and suggests that what the sheriff will do is protect the people from the federal government, right? Rather than the sheriff as a law enforcement officer to keep people safe, the law enforcement officer is there, right? The people need to be protected from the federal government. And I think it has appeal among people who dislike the federal government and among, you know, far right libertarian style
militia folks,
everyone from militia folks to Tea Party folks to, you know, all sorts of people who don't want to follow federal work. I mean, nowadays the Claremont Institute also, you know, suggesting that these sheriffs, what they can actually do is block federal enforcement. Now, you know, Mack will use stories of people who seem mildly sympathetic, but what happens when you scratch the surface is there's, you know, a lot of prevarication on his part. So, you know, he mentions the IRS. Richard Mack is not a fan of paying taxes. He actually has a tax attorney who is not allowed to practice tax law because he advises his clients not to pay taxes, which is not the law. So he has a tax attorney who's not a tax attorney who advises him not to pay taxes, which is a little funny because for this reason, his organization is not structured as a nonprofit because Richard Mack doesn't want to pay taxes or file tax documents. So, right, a lot of it kind of ends up a bit self-serving.
Right, and, but we got to recognize that they may be on the fringe, but they are directly involved in law and order and even election denial, and they are gaining ground. So we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. If you want to call in with a question, a comment about these constitutional sheriffs, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We'll be back in 1 minute.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Coming up in the second half hour, we're going to be joined by Bexar County Judge Peter Sakai. But right now we're talking about sheriffs. We're joined by Jessica Fischko. Her book is The Highest Law in the Land, How the Unchecked Power of Sheriffs threatens democracy. This is not all sheriffs. These are a certain group of sheriffs. They align themselves or part of a group called constitutional sheriffs. And Jessica, how many are people who are, you know, sheriffs are there who believe this stuff?
So we think it's about 10% of all sheriffs, so around 300. And I want to be clear that it's true. While this is a minority of sheriffs, certainly there's over 3,000 in the United States. What we are talking about is a group of sheriffs whose ideology is extremely appealing to many sheriffs. In Texas alone, at one point, this constitutional sheriff group had recruited over 100 and something sheriffs in Texas. And there's about 250 sheriffs in Texas, right? So that means almost half of Texas sheriffs at one point in time were affiliating themselves with this group.
We have a sheriff's race right now. It will be decided in November, a Republican and a Democrat. And the Republican, Nathan Buchanan, he embraces the fact that he was endorsed by Arpaio, you know, and that he has also shown that he believes many of these tenets in the constitutional sheriff. I don't know if he himself uses this terminology, but, you know, these are things that, you know, voters need to know about this stuff when they go to vote.
I think that's right. And look, not all sheriffs will call themselves constitutional sheriffs, and some will say it and mean different things. When I talk to a variety of Texas sheriffs who had gone to these so-called constitutional sheriff trainings, which, by the way, were deemed not proper trainings, so they're no longer credited by TCOL, the training agency. When I talk to sheriffs about it, most told me that while they didn't agree with everything, that they agreed with quite a lot. So I think that, you know, while the number of people who might be strict adherents is low, I think the number of people who believe some portion of it, so for example, you know, they may not believe in enforcing gun laws, that's a lot higher.
Right, and also immigration. We'll get to that, though. Let's go back and hear another clip from our friend Richard Mack. And this gets to the point in your book title, How Unchecked Power of Sheriffs Threatens Democracy. And here he is talking.
2,000 mules has presented overwhelming evidence. Just as it was mentioned there, it cannot be dismissed, and yet it is daily. We don't want anyone in law enforcement, especially sheriffs, who don't have to ask permission from anybody to start an investigation in their own county.
And let me just say that 2,000 mules has been discredited. Salem Media, the conservative company behind the book and the film, they have issued an apology for that, and they have withdrawn publication and distribution of the film, and they have, you know, they're trying to distance themselves from it because it does not hold up, and they have been challenged in the lawsuit. But, Jessica, to the point, though, that this constitutional former sheriff is saying that sheriffs should be investigating election fraud and things, you know, how does that enter into what you tell us in the book?
So I first want to be clear that sheriffs do not play a role in elections, right? There's actually laws that prohibit uniformed law enforcement officers from being in too near polling stations, right, for intimidation purposes. So, you know, I want to be clear that this is largely a sort of fantasy. People who have put out the film 2,000 Mules, groups like True the Vote, who is one of the organizations that produced that movie, have argued that sheriffs should be involved in elections. And the reason for that, honestly, is that sheriffs are political actors with also law enforcement powers. So because they are political, they can decide that they would like to enforce certain types of, you know, laws or crimes if they want to. And they have real law enforcement power, right? So, you know, there are actual stories of sheriffs going door to door, asking people, you know, whether they had encountered a particular individual who was helping voters. You know, in Texas, Ken Paxton recently went after a group that was assisting Latino voters with registration. And these are the types of things that sheriffs can easily become involved in, largely because they don't have any specific limits on their powers and what they can and can't investigate. And because that discretion is so wide, they're very easily co-opted into these kind of like purely political types of acts.
I'm going to play another clip, and this is from Barry County Sheriff Dar Leaf, who you also include in your reporting in the book.
The chief conservator of the peace. The chief conservator of the peace. You look up Black's Law Dictionary, chief is the one above everybody else. What that does, it gives you the power, and I don't know if you're going to appreciate me saying this. If we can't get anywhere, we're looking at doing grand juries at the common law. People questioning me about that. You can do that? Well, yeah, you're the chief conservator of the peace. It's under the posse comitatus. The sheriff has full control over the posse. That's the power of the county. You telling me that you people out there don't have the authority for grand juries? Where do I get my authority from, folks? You!
So what does he mean by all that?
So I've actually spent quite a lot of time talking to Sheriff Darley.
Yeah.
His views actually veer even further to anti-government than Richard Mack. So here he's talking about a lot of ideology that people associate with sovereign citizens. Sovereign citizens are a sort of far-right group. They're a branch of the militia movement, and they go further beyond kind of unlimited firearm ownership and argue, in essence, that they have a sort of their own code of laws. The idea is something like you could sort of make up your own laws if you want to. So if you feel someone's committed a crime, you can assemble your own citizen grand jury and indict people. Now, that, again, this is totally, this is just not true. It's kind of fantastical. He is talking about, you know, the power of the posse or posse comitatus is in fact real. You know, in many places, sheriffs can still have a volunteer posse, which is something like a group of citizens who have various duties. In a lot of places, they cannot actually enforce laws. But, you know, famously, Joe Arpaio had a massive volunteer posse, some like 2,000 people, and they used to go out and pull over drivers, police schools, like generally they were causing actually quite a lot of confusion and havoc, because this is a lot of civilian police to have running around. But the gist is just that the sheriff, you know, in the olden days could call up the armed men of the county to go after, you know, whatever bad guy they felt like they needed. And it's still around today. Like California in some counties used to have a law that required people to join the posse if called. You were charged with a misdemeanor crime if you didn't do it. So it's, you know, these are things that are still in existence. But, you know, here Leaf is using this to argue something like that the sheriff is a bit like a king. Actually, Darleaf uses the comparison of a knight, right? That he is the knight protecting his county, and his badge is his shield. It's sort of a romantic, almost, right? This romantic fascination with the kind of Anglo-Saxon heritage. You know, sometimes people talk about the Anglo-Saxon heritage of the sheriff, this sort of
right. You
know, interest in cool medieval stuff. That I think holds a lot of appeal.
Well, I don't know about that, but he did get, he won handedly his recent primary, a Republican primary in Barry County. There is no Democrat opposing him, so he essentially has won re-election. Barry County has about 60,000 people in it, and it really is kind of in the middle of nowhere. I mean, how does a person who is the sheriff of a, you know, small population county actually have that much authority? He has been suing the statewide elected leaders of the state, saying, you know, that they are corrupt and they are not following the law and things like that frequently. So he thinks he's more than the king of the county.
He does. And I want to add, you know, he won this primary. He had a challenger from within his own office. So a lot of people in that county, Republicans among them, have gotten kind of irritated with his constant investigation of election fraud. His office is rather small, and he has one full deputy dedicated to just election investigations, right? So imagine you have four investigators looking at crimes, thefts, murders, right, domestic violence, and one whole person is only doing elections, that's, you know, that's very burdensome on the taxpayers. He actually smeared his opponent in the primary by releasing a preliminary investigation through a public records request on purpose right before the election. So even though he's investigating election fraud, one could say he just committed election fraud himself.
Wow. Let's go to a caller. Jack is on the line, and Jack, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you. I'm a 27-year-old voter, and I believe that the sheriff's department should actually be, their resources should be transferred to the police departments instead, because sheriffs are politicians and not employees. And I think we as citizens are better served by employees and not the sheriff. So get rid of the sheriff's department entirely.
All right, Jack, thank you for that. Are we seeing people saying that a more is Jack's opinion, you know, an outlier?
Well, I think so. I mean, look, in my book, I make an argument that the office of sheriff doesn't serve a purpose anymore. And so I don't think it's, you know, the version of, I think that there's a lot of bad things about sheriff's offices, that they are prone to right-wing radicalization. So I myself call for that, and largely because the United States as a country, we have tens of thousands of police departments all across the country. We have so many small police departments and large police departments that it's, we're sort of already awash in too many different departments anyway. I think the concern for a lot of people is that because sheriffs manage jails. So in most counties, as particularly in Texas, I think, I don't know that every county has a jail, but everywhere there is a jail, it's managed by an elected county sheriff. And of course, these county jails not only serve an important function in the criminal legal system, they also give the sheriff more power in terms of constructing the jail, contracts for the jail, taking money to hold people in the jail. So, you know, rural counties who have jails will charge other counties to hold people for them. They get paid by the federal government to hold people awaiting deportation. So, you know, it's really like kind of this entire industry that county sheriffs have in particular, that, and that helps make them very powerful because they have, you know, in many places, they are a department that can support themselves, right? By charging money and issuing contracts, they often serve as the money-making part of the county government.
And but the money is appropriated and managed by the commissioner's court or the county judge. So, but they frequently come into conflict. I've seen it so many times covering local politics all across Texas.
Yes, that's absolutely true. There's no question that, you know, the county commissioners and the sheriff frequently come into conflict, largely because they see themselves as sort of equals, right? So the sheriff will say, well, the county commissioners can't really tell me what to do. And the county commissioners and the county sheriff might disagree on they might disagree on how policing ought to happen or what should happen.
But really, voters, I mean, they are elected. So,
yes.
If they don't like the sheriff, I guess they wait for the next election.
That's what sheriffs would themselves say, wait for the next election. But of course, what we see is it's a lot harder to elect a new sheriff than it might seem. Look at how Darleaf knocked out his competition within the office. If you are the person with all the power, then what is it to stop you from using that power to knock out your competition?
And then maybe one day there'll be a new sheriff in town. Jessica Pishko is the author of the book, The Highest Law in the Land, How the Unchecked Power of Sheriffs Threatens Democracy, writing about the movement of constitutional sheriffs who claim they are unbound by federal authority. They are a threat to local civil rights, voting rights, immigration, all sorts of things. Jessica, thank you so much for your reporting and your writing on this. It was great.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back from this break, we'll be joined by Bexar County Judge Peter Sakai to talk about downtown sports centers, complexes that could be in the works. What happened in court today, challenged by the Attorney General Ken Paxton, and other good things. Just call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255. The Source continues right after this break. Stay with us.